Welcome me, hale, hale, ya, ui, kui, hule, hale, ya, ui, kui, hule.
Welcome to the California Indian Radio Project.
Ui, kui, hule, hale, ya, ui, kui, hule, hale, ya, welcome me, hale, ya, welcome me.
This program is fighting for sovereignty.
Sovereignty means power. Sovereignty is very difficult to obtain.
Sovereignty is something that you have that is given to you through the Creator, through your parents, through your traditions, through your ways. It's like a way of life to me.
Tribal sovereignty to our people, it means everything. To us, tribal sovereignty has always been a part of our life since creation.
If you ask any American Indian, Alaskan Native, or Native Hawaiian what makes them different from any other U.S. citizen, they will tell you that they are members of sovereign nations. It is this identity, along with culture and land, that separates Indians from non-Indians. But it is not just a governmental designation. Tribal sovereignty is defined by the Constitution and put into practical use every day on reservations and treaty lands. Sovereignty is a public policy that defines the relationship between tribes and the federal government. Today, tribes across the nation find themselves engaged in a variety of legal battles with individual states that challenge their right to exist. In California, the tribes face many complications and conflicts. The most well-known is the gaming issue, but there are others. To an Indian, the issue of tribal sovereignty is not only about policies. It also impacts culture and identity and the very foundation of one's dignity. To be an Indian in California is what this program examines.
To Indians, sovereignty is everything. But what is sovereignty? On this program, we'll hear California natives talk about sovereignty from a legal perspective, as well as from a personal level. Because that's what sovereignty is. It's not only about policies, it's also about the power to practice your religion freely and to simply be an Indian. As tribal governments gain economically, they've been able to confront the legal system and have encountered resistance at the state level, especially when it comes to economic development through gaming venues. Native Americans, in particular California Natives, feel it is their sovereign right to govern on their own lands without state interference. It's a complex subject that will be in dispute for many years to come, and it all started with the U.S. Constitution. I'm Peggy Berryhill. Joe Salk, Eastern Paiute, is an educator who was instrumental in obtaining federal recognition for his tribe. He explained sovereignty.
When did, you know, the United States get involved in internal affairs? Because they never intended to do that. I'm from a Paiute tribe that's in the Eastern Sierra called Utulwe'ek Paiute Tribe. On tribal sovereignty, I think it really goes way back to the Constitution and beyond. The big issue, I think, is centered around the framing of the Constitution. There's only two areas in the Constitution that Indian tribes are mentioned. One is in a commerce clause that allows the federal government to regulate commerce between states, foreign countries, and Indian tribes. And the second one is in the Bill of Rights dealing with voting. And those are the only two provisions in the Constitution that mention Indians. Now, when you go back to the discussion of the framers of the Constitution and their convention, they never intended at any time to get involved in the internal affairs of the tribe. The only thing they were concerned about was regulating commerce between tribes and other people, basically, and foreign countries. Until we can get away from feds making laws that are being challenged in the Supreme Court, we'll never be a complete sovereign nation.
My name is Clarence Atwell, Jr. I'm the tribal chairman for Santa Rosa Rancheria Tachayoka Tribe. Originally, we were located in the foothills of Kettleman City. At the time, they discovered oil up there, and the federal government came in. They said, well, we'll trade, swap the land. We'll give you 40 acres down here in the valley for the land up there. And now it's one of the probably the top oil industries within this county right now.
The land swap wasn't such a good deal for the Tachiyokut. The Santa Rosa Rancheria is located northeast of Tule River, near the Lemoore Naval Air Station. Clarence Atwell Jr. is the traditional leader and tribal chairman for the Tachiyokut tribe. After the land deal, the tribe struggled with economic issues for years.
They didn't say nothing about it. They just told my ancestors, you know, we'll give you good land, you know, down rich farmland down in the valley. And then they said, oh, okay. And so they gave them 40 acres here where we're at now. And that's how it started out. We have 652 tribal members today. And our economic development, we tried farming, which we couldn't grow nothing because of the alkaline soil and everything else.
With gaming, they have turned their circumstances around and are now valued members of the community. Gaming has improved the quality of life not only for the members of the Santa Rosa Rancheria, but also for the local town of Lemoore and the surrounding county. But a dispute with former California Governor Pete Wilson over the legality of video game machines created a dilemma for the tribe. Chairman Atwell had to decide whether to follow the state's dictates or act in a sovereign manner and open his casino doors.
So, well, what do we do? So we break the law, get machines, and hope for the best that we don't all go to jail or whatever, you know, for breaking federal law and everything else. The heck with it, let's do it. Everybody else is doing it. So 3 years ago, we got machines. We started with 18 machines. Then we went up to 100. Now we got 485 machines. Within that 3 years time, we built 97 new houses. We tore all the old houses down on the Rancheria. We replaced them all. We also have a good relationship with the county itself. You know, we have, we've been helping them out. We bought a new fire truck for one of the fire stations. We got hyperlators for all 11 fire stations within the county. They said only the county's afford to buy one for one station. They had 10 to go. So we bought all the rest of them one. Here lately, we got a response on that, you know, said, well, thanks to Santa Rosa, you know, you guys just saved about two or three lives in the past 3 years, you know, with these machines that you got for the county. So a lot of things have changed since then. 20 years ago, they didn't care less if we were here or not, you know.
The 29 Palms Band of Mission Indians are direct descendants of the Chemehuevi Indians of Arizona and parts of California. And back in the days of the old government in the 1800s, they were moved to this location. Currently, there's 13 tribal members.
While tribes like the Navajo have lands that stretch over three states, many California tribes have very little land. The 29 Palms Band has one of the smallest land bases, measuring in at 100,000 square feet, or just over 2 acres of desert sand. They struggled to maintain their culture and pride until gaming turned the tide for them. Today, all tribal members have their own homes, and no government program provided the funds. Aaron Thomas is their marketing specialist.
Because of their poverty, they weren't real proud of being who they were, you know, and that's very, very understandable. I mean, if you look at the conditions they had, it was not, you know, a great place to be Indian. It was not a good place to be on a reservation. It was, you know, what they had in the past was just sand. There was no economic development for them. Most of the tribal members had no housing. Some of them had no, and if they did have housing, there was no running water, no sewage, anything like that. It was just a hut, basically a shack. I know some stories of some tribal members that lived under trees. I mean, it was that bad.
Gaming has been good for many California tribes. The state of California, however, opposed the tribes' rights to establish casinos on their lands. For the tribes, the issue is not really about gaming. It's really about sovereignty.
Tribal sovereignty to our people, it means everything. To us, tribal sovereignty has always been a part of our life since creation. Tribal sovereignty means that, you know, we can determine our own membership within our tribe and enact our own laws and enforce our own laws through that system. My name is Phil Hunter from the Tule River Indian Reservation. I'm the tribal chairman at this time. And our reservation is located in central California, south of Fresno. Our reservation is comprised of around 56,000 acres with a total membership of, I can say, almost 1,700 tribal members. But as far as, say, the gaming issue and what that brings to the tribe is employment, and people feel better about themselves, they have better self-concept, and, you know, they're going to work and they're getting off the welfare rolls, and they're making money, and then they're bettering their self through the material world. You know, maybe they have a car, or they can maybe even buy the things that they need for, you know, their kids and themselves.
Marcia Hunter is the training coordinator for the casino. She takes the concept of sovereignty to heart and says that many businesses have come to the tribe offering a variety of partnerships. But she feels economic development must fit in with their cultural values, which means looking far into the future.
There have been some different economic programs that have been presented to the tribe through different people, through different corporations and companies. But I've always fought that because they want to use the water or they want to use the land without doing any assessments on that, without looking at the environment or looking at how it's going to affect the next seven generations. How are people going to live? You know, how are we going to take care of the young later if we use up all our natural resources now?
Sovereignty means that you can govern our lands according to your tribe.
Priscilla Hunter, tribal chair of the Coyote Band of Pomo. Hunter feels strongly that the attacks on gaming are unfair, since gaming has brought so much to the people of Coyote Valley in the way of programs. She sees the state interference as an issue of control over Indian people.
You know, the local county, state government didn't care what we did on their reservation because they didn't want to give us any funding. You know, and now that we have a economic development, a project that we can make money at and be a part of the political arena, they don't like it. Right now what they want is more control from the state to be able to, you know, come in and deal with the environment, the land uses. They want to be able to come in and regulate our gaming because we have our own regulations on our reservation with the gaming. But we do abide by federal law. But they want to oversee the laws that we govern ourselves, that we're responsible to the federal government. They want to be able to come in and be over that. They want control. We have a distribution plan. We have a health, we have education, we have for administration, we have land acquisition, burial fund, and we have set aside $500 for people to request for assistance for everyone.
Welcome to my country.
Another issue that must be included in any discussion of Native sovereignty is about how Indians are identified or how tribal membership is defined. The federal government says you're an Indian if you have 1/4 degree of blood quantum. Today, however, some tribes reject that designation and are instituting their own policies. Phil Hunter.
On our reservation, there's no blood quantum. We have through our laws and bylaws is a how membership's determined. Usually one of the parents had to live on the reservation for a year prior to the son or daughter's birth. And that's how we determine tribal membership. We do not include the blood quantum as some other tribes do. The BIA, as far as blood quantum, and we tell the people that they set up blood quantums to more or less get rid of the Indian problem, and they go by 1/4 blood quantum. If you're 1/4 blood quantum or less, then you're not considered eligible for benefits through the BIA, such as education. And even today, you know, you probably couldn't fill up a Boeing 747 with the, you know, full-blooded Indian people, because we're all a mixture of different races. I can hear the voice. I can hear the voice. Come through the night. I can't let go of the old way. I can't let go.
I don't really know what sovereignty is, because I'm an unrecognized person. Sometimes when I hear about sovereignty, it upsets me now.
The Pitt Rivers have never signed a treaty. We've never given up our sovereign right as an Indian nation. And because of that, it still stands that we are an indigenous traditional government.
We don't like the idea that the federal government has to classify us, but that's the way it is. The federal government can do just about anything they want to you. But as far as we're concerned, we know we're Indian.
Norma Turner, Radley Davis, Florence Dick. Indian people on the other side of the fence, so to speak. People who are from sovereign nations but lack federal status. All three represent tribes who have been denied federal recognition. As Native people, living with so many labels is just a part of life, so it may seem strange to others, but having your tribe designated as federally recognized can be an affirmation. On the other hand, living in the limbo world of non-recognition creates personal stress and can erode an individual, leaving a person feeling like they have no identity. Julie Dix Tex is from a band of Mono living on allotted land in Dunlap, California. She describes how it feels to her.
How does it make you feel? We know we're Indian, but what federal recognition has done for us is it has made us a non-Indian. When you're applying for a job, not having your children covered under the Indian Child Welfare Act, Native American Artisans Act, Indian Health Services, Indian Education, any federal act that says you have to be federally recognized, it eliminates us. So then who are you? And that's what it's really done to us, is it's left us without an identity. In our heart, we know who we are. But sometimes that doesn't count because we're in the minority as far as the dominant society is concerned.
The Dunlap Mono are active in their surrounding communities of North Fork. Whether recognized by the U.S. government or unrecognized, these small bands of California Indians exercise their sovereignty by remaining on what is left of their traditional land base. They, too, follow the teachings of their elders and parents. Florence Dick remembers the words of her father.
He emphasized that we should always keep the land, always, because you can't replace land. And we're finding that today, where we live is 50 miles east of Fresno, and it's right now it's prime land. But I've emphasized in my children that they need to keep the land, because they'll never replace it. They'll never be able to buy the kind of land that we have. It's not the best, but it's ours. We're fighting this battle to get federally recognized. We know who we are. We know where we came from. I've said this before in testimony that we eat, we speak, and we still live like Monos, like they did a long time ago. And so we're proud of that.
I'm Norma Turner, and I live here in Auberry. You know, if the people would stay Indian and think Indian and respect the land, especially our sacred lands, then, you know, whatever sovereignty is, I guess, that would be, sovereignty would be all right.
Norma Turner, a recognized leader in her community. She taught in the local schools, sat on the Central Valley Indian Health Board, and is a member of the California Indian Basket Weavers Association. She is concerned that younger Indians are losing respect for traditional laws, and she's not sure that casinos have helped encourage traditions.
Some of the younger people, they're not respecting Mother Earth. And talking about sovereignty now, I was really happy when the casino started up. I was happy for the people because they had a hard time. And there's a lot of money involved in that in one of the casinos here. But they don't really understand that, you know, they're Indian. We Indians are the caretakers of this land. So instead of preserving the land, it seems as if they're destroying it. We need to live by the laws. We can't just let it go. I see people doing things that they say contemporary. I don't even know what a contemporary Indian is. I don't. If they're not going to do it like our ancestors did, then don't call it Indian. Because that's what made our ancestors so strong, was because they lived by these laws. And whenever everybody lives by the law, things just go real good.
Radley Davis is a psychologist with the Pitt River Tribal Health Program. The Pitt River people have maintained their independence as a sovereign nation, meeting every challenge from the state, county, and federal governments.
When we're challenged or faced with something that is in question, that a government says they have some authority or right, their arm of the government, whether it be BIA or BLM, we in turn exercise our sovereignty and re-educate everyone about the dual roles that we play, but our indigenous sovereignty is the supreme law. And that is something that we want to exercise, but we have to be a whole, healthy people to do that.
So sovereignty is not only about laws and casinos. It's also about the ability of Indian people to exercise their religious freedom and practice their traditional ways.
Gathering basket material is an exercise of sovereignty, like bear grass or willow root. Those kinds of things are very important, the basket weavers that do this. Other people who gather acorns and juniper berries and huckleberries and elderberries, apos, these kinds of plants are very sacred, and those are also a way of exercising sovereignty. Men and women who go to the mountain and fast or go seek some type of help is also another way of exercising sovereignty. It's like appreciating life. Like, tobacco is very sacred to Pitt Rivers, like many Indian tribes. To go and pray by the creek, to acknowledge plant life, to go to a mountain and talk to it, to talk to the birds, even to sing a song, it makes them feel good because they know that we're alive. And the old people say, if we don't go sing, if we don't go gathering plants, if we don't go and have some quiet time in these places, then they believe that they're no longer needed.
Sovereignty means power, power to make their own decisions for the benefit of their own people, in the directions they want to go, and the economic development aspect of it. They all make their own decisions, and sovereignty is very difficult to obtain. A lot of the tribal members, a lot of tribes across the nation are losing their sovereign rights. And the United States government are coming in and saying, we don't think you're doing it right, so we're going to come in and do it for you.
Sovereignty is something that you have that is given to you through the Creator, through your parents, through your traditions, through your ways. It's like a way of life to me to know that from head to toe, I'm this person that can do whatever she wants with her life in a good way, and that I believe within myself and my heart that what I do is my sovereign right, is my right in a good way handed through the Creator. And as long as I'm not harming anybody and living my life right and doing what's right for myself, for my family, and for the next seven generations, and taking care of the earth and taking care of our surroundings and such, that to me is being a sovereign person. And I just believe it starts right here. And that's what creates the sovereign nations.
The battle for sovereignty is as old as Native people themselves. And as long as there are Indians, the struggle to protect sovereignty will continue. Mark LeBeau, Pitt River Nation.
In fighting for our sovereignty, we've had to give up a great deal. Like parts of our culture, like the material. There was a point in time, according to what's been passed down through historical accounts, it goes back to, you know, those ancestors that sacrificed their lives, you know, 150, 200 years ago, so that I could be here, so that other members of my tribe could be here. And it seems to me that I owe it to them. I owe thanks, you know, for standing up, for fighting, for not giving up, for continuing. And that's a part of sovereignty.
Fighting for sovereignty. This program was written and produced by Peggy Berryhill. Production assistants, Kathy Chapman. Project director, Roby Cook. Series executive producer, Peggy Berryhill. Digital editing and mixing, Neil Harvey. We would like to thank the following musicians whose music appears in this program: Robbie Robertson, Alvino Siva, Peter Cater, R. Carlos Nakai, Mark LeBeau, David Copaver, and Philip Bread. Thanks also to Leroy Miranda Jr. for Gourd Rattle Sounds, and to the singers whose music came from the California Indian Library Collection. The music of Koljidimo appears in our opening theme. This program is a project of Northern California Cultural Communications, with funds provided by the California Council for the Humanities, a state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities, the Lannan Foundation, the Left Foundation, the Vanguard Public Foundation, the Abelard Foundation, the Sierra Pacific Foundation Incorporated, and the Seventh Generation Fund. For the California Indian Radio Project, I'm Neil Harvey.
To order a cassette tape of this program or a resource guide with more information about the people and topics we've covered, call 1-800-461-3991. That's 1-800-461-3991. Or visit our website at flickerfeather.org.
This program is distributed by the American Indian Radio on satellite, a service of Native American Public Telecommunications.